This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 20th of May 2022. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 20th of May, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Vara Williams.
Hello.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. Now, the main headlines this week: teen arrested for shooting swans, new leader poised for Winchester City Council, and festival returns after 3 years. So, may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Nikki?
Which is teen arrested for shooting swans. A teenager has been arrested on suspicion of possessing a firearm without a certificate after two swans were shot dead by the River Arle. The 17-year-old boy from Alresford has since been questioned by officers and released under investigation while inquiries continue. Several pigeons were also shot. The dead birds were found with multiple pellets in their heads on a footpath adjacent to the recreation ground at Albury Park in Alresford on Monday, May the 2nd. The discovery initially sparked concerns over whether there had been a further outbreak of avian influenza, or bird flu as it's commonly known. However, it was later confirmed that the swans had been shot in what was described as a heinous act. The swans were found by Hart, H-A-R-T, Wildlife Rescue, an animal hospital in Medstead, who were also called out to deal with an injured mallard and a woodpigeon in close proximities. Their discovery led to a host of nature lovers expressing their heartbreak on social media. Paul Michael Reynolds, Hart Wildlife Manager, said, "We reported yesterday about two dead swans being found near the eel house on the River Arle in Alresford. The initial concern was that avian influenza could be responsible. Sadly, it was confirmed yesterday by Swan Support, who kindly removed the bodies for testing, that the pair of swans had been brutally killed with an air weapon. They were a male and female pair, each swan with multiple pellets in their head and neck. We were also called to two other injured birds, a woodpigeon and a mallard, all within very close proximity and also on the river footpath. Hampshire Constabulary are involved, and if you have any evidence or information about these crimes, then please call 101. This is a heinous act, which we are sure no one would expect to see in Alresford, a village famous for its wonderful waterfowl. Those responsible should be held to account."
New leader poised for Winchester City Council. Winchester City Council is set to have a new leader with an internal reshuffle of the Liberal Democrat administration. Councillor Martin Todd is being proposed to replace Lucille Thompson at the annual council meeting at the Guildhall on Wednesday evening. It comes after Councillor Thompson decided to step down, and he was then chosen as leader of the Liberal Democrat group by his colleagues at a recent meeting. Councillor Thompson will formally propose Councillor Todd as the new council leader. In a statement, the Lib Dem group said, "Councillor Thompson decided to stand down after 7 years as Liberal Democrat group leader and 3 years as leader of Winchester City Council." The Lib Dems had a successful recent election campaign. Despite several controversial issues, such as the proposed sale of the River Park Leisure Centre to Southampton University and the eviction of traders in King's Walk, the party increased its grip on the council, ending with 27 Lib Dems against 15 Conservatives, with two independents and one Green. Councillor Thompson said, "I am very pleased to be proposing Martin as our new leader. He's been a hard-working councillor for many years and was the architect of our recent election victory. He also wrote the ambitious and positive manifesto that helped give us 9 out of 14 seats in the election and maintain our control of the council. As a cabinet colleague, he was responsible for delivering a whole range of initiatives, including some of the fastest growing recycling levels in the country and the pedestrianisation of the square. Councillor Todd commented, "We owe Lucille a huge amount for her leadership over the last 7 years. She led the Liberal Democrats to control of the council, and after taking control, she led the council through the pandemic at the same time as it cut its carbon footprint by more than a third. Despite the challenges we face, the council has continued to deliver for local people while keeping council tax down. There are still major challenges ahead. We have said we will go greener faster. We cannot be complacent about our economic recovery. The council needs to be efficient in keeping costs down. When many people are facing challenging times, we have to protect services that support the most vulnerable."
A very famous festival returns after 3 years. Arsford's famous Watercress Festival took place recently after a three-year absence. The festival, in its 18th year, saw people gather to enjoy watercress that had been grown locally in the chalk stream farms for over a century. Established nearly 20 years ago by the Watercress Company to raise awareness to the health-giving properties of the plant, which grows naturally in chalk streams, the festival has grown, bringing in up to 10,000 visitors this year, despite the wet weather. A procession in which the Watercress King and Queen pronounce the festival open with their launching of bunches of the plant to the waiting crowds pave the way for a day in which cookery demonstrations, musical groups, a flash dance mob, and the World Watercress Eating Championship helped raise money for the local charity Abbey's Heroes. Now, this article is accompanied by a whole series of pictures, and I also have a little bit of a personal note in here. One of the pictures shows the eating champion, Glenn Walsh, munching his way through a mound of watercress, and in fact the daughter-in-law of a friend of ours also took place in that competition. A mere slip of a lass, but she certainly can eat her watercress. We have the MasterChef winner, Selena Permalou, showing what can be done with watercress. And a gentleman here actually with his waders on, gathering the old Victorian way, the watercress. A couple of really finely dressed horses here, Suffolk Punch, drawing the carriage towards the start of the festival. We've also got a picture here of the Hook Morris dancers, who look very fine. The weather, I'm afraid, wasn't exactly perfect. And there's a flash dance mob here of some youngsters who are certainly enthusiastic, although they are probably quite drenched, but they're giving it their all. So an excellent festival.
It was, and it was wet, and I did get drowned. Okay, so that concludes the headlines, and now we continue with the death announcements, and then Christian comment, letters to the editor, Chronicle comment, first person, and Bell Durham. So we start with the death announcements this week. Davies, Gillian Davies, at home after a short illness, aged 85. Paul Pollack, peacefully at Winchester Hospice, aged 78. At Roberts, Elizabeth Roberts, died aged 74. And now we continue with Christian comment, please, Andrew.
And this week's Christian comment was written by the Reverend Philip Crinks, and it's something which is extremely relevant today, and it's titled Stability and Renewal. One thing we yearn for in our faith is stability. A much-loved prayer cries out to God that we who are wearied by the changes and chances of this fleeting world may rest upon your eternal changelessness. It is indeed at times of rapid change that we particularly feel this yearning. And we do find stability in God. His grace and goodness, mercy and love are everlasting, ever reliable. At the same time, when we read the scriptures and reflect on our own experiences, it is obvious that our relationship with God does also involve embracing change. God's work in his world takes the form of renewal, often very dramatic renewal. Imagine being a psalmist in the temple in Jerusalem. A great theme of your book of Psalms is that God deserves new songs. Repeats of the same familiar hymn list are not enough for those who praise the living God. O sing unto the Lord a new song, for he hath done marvellous things. Or imagine being St. Peter, having lived all your life as a devout Jew, keeping the purity laws, then in one dream it is revealed that those who did not keep those laws could be equally part of Christ's body. Or imagine seeing the mystical visions that make up the book of Revelation. The writer sees what it is to come at the end of time. Total change on a vast scale. God will make a new heaven and a new earth. Not just our own lives, but the whole of creation will be renewed. Or imagine the Last Supper. In John's telling, it is at the moment of greatest drama that Jesus says he is glorified, when Judas goes out to set in train the events that will lead to his arrest. That is because it is then that Jesus comes to the climax of his renewing work, as he dies on the cross and rises from the tomb to be exalted in glory. In the end, stability and renewal must come together in our faith. The changelessness we need can be found in God. His nature also involves an amazing spiritual dynamism and energy. This is seen in the work of the Holy Spirit, through which our lives, as we interact with a changing world, can be ever renewed. Deep down, we desire God's renewing work in us no less than his stability. What is soiled, make thou pure. What is wounded, work its cure. What is parched, fructify. What is rigid, gently bend. What is frozen, warmly tend. Strengthen what goes erringly. The changes involved in this are sometimes painful. Awkward transitions and tearful goodbyes. Yet, with the eyes of faith, we see that these can also be part of God's everlasting love. They can be the working out of God's good purpose to save and renew his creation. Another much-loved prayer we can offer cries out to God to carry through this work, that the whole world may feel and see that things which were cast down are being raised up, and things which had grown old are being made new, and all things are returning to perfection, through him from whom they took their origin, even Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen.
Thank you. Now we move on to letters to the editor. Nikki, you've got the first one.
And the first one from Kate McIntosh, headed Ill-Informed and Less Attractive. It takes a special form of myopia, especially when budgets for public works are tight, to spend money on degrading a public space and inconveniencing traders. The space in question is just south of the entrance to King's Walk, where an enclosing brick wall was erected just a few years ago, providing protection to a seating area now used by one of the three bike cafes, which are always doing a flourishing trade when not plagued by cement dust plus screaming grinders and drills. The wall was not a great design, having an uninviting crenellated coping just where a weary shopper might wish to perch for a moment, but it was sturdy and low maintenance. This has now been replaced, after weeks of Harris fencing and canvas screening, by a black-stained, timber-stained palisade fence. A similar operation is afoot for the wall enclosing the space to the north of the entrance to King's Walk, once again disrupting trade for the cafe there. I'm informed that Winchester City Council includes on its staff role urban designers. I cannot believe that anyone with a qualification in that skill was involved in the decision to replace a durable, visually inconspicuous wall with a fence better suited to a suburban garden, incurring a maintenance liability, making the enclosed space more draughty and generally less attractive. Who is responsible for this ill-informed decision-making? And that's Kate McIntosh, MBE, RIBA, West End Terrace, Winchester.
The next letter is headed No Park Sundays and comes from M. Gill. I read with interest the letter from a Winnell resident regarding parking in Winnell. That was in the Chronicle letters May the 12th. As a resident in a block of flats overlooking Central Car Park, we are obliged to have a parking permit which only covers us from Mondays to Saturdays. And since parking charges were introduced, we now find that if we move our vehicles on a Sunday, we have to pay to park as the permit places are taken up with drivers who do not want to pay. When I first queried this, I was told that as parking was free on Sundays, that's why permits do not cover Sundays. Well, parking is no longer free, and I have requested our permits be extended to cover Sundays, but the council do not seem interested. Permit charges have also increased considerably over the last 3 years, from £22 plus in 2018-19 to £50 this year. And although it's still cheap, what else has risen by over 100%? That's from M. Gill, Lawn Street, Winchester.
And we have another letter here, which is a fairly contentious subject, from Karen Barrett. And it's titled Land Reform Need. With limited wildlife expertise, I can't comment on the alleged outrageous behaviour of Winchester College concerning the removal of a swan's nest. That was in the Chronicle May 12th. Your report, however, is a reminder of the vast swathes of land in the ownership of public schools and other old institutions, the church, the monarchy, and the rest of the landed gentry, who all continue to benefit from their historic acquisitions, the details of which are often lost in the mists of time. Winchester College already owns a sizable chunk of the city, while maintaining a lucrative property portfolio, an example being the sale of Barton Farm for development, and the purchase of the pump house on Garnier Road for let, etc., etc. Our so-called modern democracy is in desperate need of land reform, as well as much stricter criteria for beneficial charitable status. Until then, Winchester College will continue to pursue, quote, its own interests, unquote, because it can. And that's from Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
We seem to have a sort of swan theme, this one. And this is another one which it has nothing to do with the last two, I think. And it's from Simon Lever, headed Sad Swan Song. The Itchen Navigation is my favourite walk and always includes passing these magnificent swans. And that was from the Chronicle, May the 12th, an article, obviously. I naturally maintain a respectful distance and have never been approached by a swan defending its nest. There is indeed a sign warning walkers of potential aggression. Common sense suggests it is obvious distance to be maintained, should be maintained. A swan has a right to protect its nest, eggs, and a forthcoming cygnets from its irresponsible dog walkers and ignorant passers-by. Swans choose their location for nesting, not humans. Swans will know the ideal place for their nest, not humans. A swan has a right to protect its eggs and cygnets, and I am appalled at the action taken to move these majestic icons of nature. When the swans awakened in their new location, what on earth was their reaction? Seeing swans nesting beside the Itchen Navigation is a privilege that should never be taken for granted. I shall miss seeing them on my next stroll through our beautiful countryside. And that's Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
This one is headed Pothole Woes from Hugh Saxton. There's much to be glad about living in Hampshire, but to drive, ride or cycle here is to spend time avoiding potholes. A recent trip to Wiltshire shows that other counties, though not free of the problem, can do much better. With summer ahead, we might hope for repair activity on our roads, but it seems that Hampshire County Council have set aside £50 million to deal with the problem, currently estimated as needing £250 million. So most current ruts, holes, dips and depressions will have another winter to get worse in, and doubtless others will join them. That's from Hugh Saxton, Houghton Road, Stockbridge.
And this letter is a call to arms from Alex Klin, and he's at the Burselton Brickworks Museum Trust, and it's titled Brickworks 125. The story of how the Brickworks Museum in Burselton survived in its original form is a fascinating one. The brickworks narrowly avoided demolition due to a unique combination of tradition, chance, and phenomenal insight. It is now the last remaining Victorian steam-powered brickworks in the country. It's a fantastic visitor attraction, listed heritage site, and the only example of its kind in the UK. We are celebrating our 125th anniversary this year with visitor events, activities, and especially commissioned artwork, Corralent, by artist Emma Smith. Come and visit. And as you might expect, that is from Alex Flynn, Burselton Brickworks Museum Trust, Cole Park Lane, Swanwick.
Thank you. That concludes the letters. Now we move on to Chronicle editorial comment, please, Nikki.
Which is headed, "We know that your money matters." By now, all of us will have felt the pinch. In fact, the statistics show that 83% of adults in the UK reported an increase in their cost of living in March 2022. And this is just the tip of a cost of living iceberg. The crisis has been brought about by a perfect storm: rising prices of consumer goods, skyrocketing energy bills, increased petrol costs, cuts to benefits, rising rent and tax, all the result of a tumultuous few years, starting with Brexit, followed by the pandemic, and then the war in Ukraine. Consumer prices are measured by the Consumer Price Index. Was 7% higher in March 2022 than a year before. Gas prices increased by 28% and electricity by 19% in the year up to March, with further increases to come as the energy price cap increases. As the cost of living has soared, most people's wages have not kept up, employers awarding average pay rises of 3%, well below the current inflation of 6.2%. Experts are warning Britain is heading for the worst fall in living standards since the 50s. We know that money matters. That's why we thank you more than ever for buying the Hampshire Chronicle, and hope that our At Your Money Matters campaign, which starts today, page 2, will help in some way.
Thank you, Vara. Could we have first person, please?
First person, yes. This has been written by Joanna Lewis, and it's headed, "The Prof Will See You Now." I've been promoted to professor. I must confess it feels a tiny bit fabulous, though strange. Growing up, I always dreamt of being an air hostess. Rather more glamorous, with more travel, yes. But I would have been hopeless, being clumsy, forgetful, and easily distracted. My school careers advisor suggested a librarian. I would have been terrible at that too, dyslexic and untidy. I like clutter, not an orderly system. So maybe this odd world of academia was a natural compromise, even if it rarely feels normal. What might this new enhanced status mean, I ask myself? Will I now be expected to say professor-like things? Become impossibly contrary, controversial and cross? Will I suddenly start wearing a tweed waistcoat and a money belt? I looked around for professorial icons for a steer. I wasn't completely reassured. Hogwarts Professor Dumbledore or Cambridge's Mary Beard? I might have to go my own way. So I decided to be proactive, or as the students say, to own it. I would start by doing something I'd been putting off for a long time. Surely, with this new gravitas and marker of esteem, I could summon up the courage and do it. I made that call. Yep, I upgraded my mobile. Initially, it all went well. No more tiny phone, no more peering close up to read a text. The screen was so small, I once ordered 12 packs of loose tea by mistake. On the train, no more looks of pity when anyone under 40 sat nearby. No more ringtone that sounded like Ivor the engine. The phone was big. It felt heavy. I had arrived. How brief that feeling was. For any sense of triumph and brain power completely vanished soon after switching it on. Why? Because every single thing I had used for years with ease now required my password. Oh, Lord. How quickly the descent into hell. Password and ID do not match. Retype your password. You have 3 more attempts. Your account has been temporarily disabled. You are frozen. You have been sent a reset password link to your chosen recovery email address. For security, type in your memorable name. To verify your request, type in the answer to your security question. Are you a robot? Half an hour later, you are finally in a position to type in a new password. You are asked for at least 10 letters, uppercase, lowercase, a number, a special characteristic. By now, sweating bullets, you come up with a winning formula. It looks like the theory of relativity, but at least you're confident it's new. You manage to type it in twice. Then up pops, "You must use a password you have not used before." Passwords are now like people. They have long histories and are increasingly complicated. What started 2 decades ago as your first pet and celebrity age has long transitioned. Memorable names? You forget them. Or you've a long run out of them. After 3 hours of this dance with the devil, I wasn't sure what my first car was anymore or where I'd been born. Had I been born at all? Was I in fact a single-celled amoeba with the brain of a nematode? Because I certainly had lost the ability to work out which pictures had fire hydrants, a sidewalk sign or traffic lights in them. Or was I in a parallel universe, taking my test in downtown Manhattan? And the worst of it? The biggest irony? The phone company I chose, the obscene amount of insurance I was talked into, the gigabytes so immense I could probably download the Himalayas, all of these were predicated on the promise of their teacher discount. But when I typed in my institution to apply as instructed on a page hidden away in their online universe, guess what came up in the box? Not recognised.
I think we can all empathise with that. Yeah, brilliant. Now we have Belgaren, please, Andrew.
I think you can tell in the studio we're all quite giggling away at that. The unfortunate thing is it's all true. Right, Belgaren, an alternative look at the news, and we have 2 articles here. The first is the City Street sculpture is set for repairs. After a long time, a landmark art sculpture in Winchester is set to be repaired. The kite flyer statue spans Parchment Street, close to the junction with St. George's Street. But a storm is thought to have damaged the piece and broken the golden kite sometime last year. The artwork is set to be repaired, and scaffolding has been erected to allow access. It was originally erected by the City Council in 2009 as a way of increasing interest from passers-by on the High Street to explore the side street, packed as it is with independent shops and businesses. Created by Marzia Colonna, it is a bronze figure of a young man flying a gilded kite while walking across a bridge nearly 6 metres above the street. The bridge on which the flyer stand was constructed by Metal Art Design Foundry in Denmead and incorporates two more kites and playful strings tangle themselves around the steel structure. The origin of the artwork dates back to 2004, when the City Council reversed the traffic flow in the one-way street, which led to a severe drop in passing trade. And the article is covered or complemented by two photographs, a close-up of the kite flyer in his glory days when the kite was erect and intact, and then another one showing the scaffolding which has been erected over Parchment Street to allow the work to continue. And it is a lovely statue. The second article is the link between Phil and the Glee Club. The cast of the musical theatre show The Glee Club met former Theatre Royal archivist Phil Yates after learning they share a special connection. The Glee Club tells the story of five miners and a church organist rehearsing for a local gala in the 1960s, while Phil was one of the Bevin boys, young men conscripted to work in the coal mines during World War II. Phil talked to the cast about being conscripted and working down the mines and told them that they portrayed the camaraderie between miners absolutely perfectly. The cast said, "We had a lovely time meeting Phil. He recognized a number of references of the play and the set. For example, the pit wheels on stage were similar to the ones at the pit that he had worked at." And this is again accompanied by a photograph of Phil Yates talking to the cast members, and in fact there is on the set a very tremendous, from a set design point of view, a tremendous wheel, the set of wheels that you see at a colliery.
Thank you, and now we have this week's announcements. We start with the lighting up time, which ends on Friday the 20th of May at 5:09 a.m. and begins at 8:55 p.m. Next Wednesday, the 25th of May, it ends at 5:03 a.m. and begins at 9:02 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please, at the moment, telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. That's 01962 711 998. We continue with items of general news. Nikki.
And this one headed, "Police to hand out 100 pink tabards to welfare officers." Police were given 100 tabards to welfare, have given 100 tabards to welfare officers working in bars and nightclubs across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. Dedicated welfare officers have received special training to ensure people are safe during a night out, from recognising the signs of drug abuse, being over the alcohol limit, whether someone is underaged or vulnerable. Officers have also been trained to recognise predatory behaviour or any activity that may lead to crime and disorder. 100 new pink tabards with "welfare" written across the front and back will allow officers to be identified more easily within venues. Rob Cohen, Force Licensing and Alcohol Harm Reduction Sergeant, set up the project and is delighted to be able to roll out the tabards. The response from the trade has been very positive. There is an opportunity for venues to highlight the welfare provisions they have in place and encourage others to do the same. The improved visibility of welfare support staff in our venues will encourage members of the public to seek help for themselves or others. This visibility will be the same in all participating venues, wherever you may go for a night out in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. Basingstoke and Dean Borough Council's Interim Executive Director of Resident Services, Tom Payne, said, "Keeping our residents safe is a priority for both Basingstoke and Dean Borough Council and Hart District Council. The nighttime economy has been hit hard by the pandemic, and the welfare officers will make people enjoying a night out feel safer and more secure. A spokesperson from Hampshire Constabulary said, "We would also like to remind those in the community they can flag areas on a map where they do not feel safe, regardless of whether a crime has taken place. The data will then be used to improve safety and introduce new measures, such as nighttime patrols or installing better street lighting in the local community. The tool forms part of the government's whole system approach to tackling violence against women and girls." And there's a very good photograph of one, two, three, four, five of them with their pink tabards with their welfare on, which must be a very good idea, especially with the spiking of drinks that's been going on in Winchester.
When I picked up this item, I thought it was an advertisement. But then I realised that mentioned in the Chronicle comment was "Your Money Matters." Because this says, "Let us help save you money. Your money matters." So here is the explanation of that. "Today we launch Your Money Matters, our campaign to help you overcome the surge in the cost of living. This year has seen a whole host of household price increases, from the energy price cap rise to surging inflation and food prices, costing your family extra per year. At the Hampshire Chronicle, we're making it our mission to look out for your cash, offering money-saving deals, competitions, giveaways, and insightful stories on the impact this cost of living crisis is having. Through our newspaper, we want to do what we can to help make your cash go further." Editorial Director Toby Granville said, "Clearly, this is a worrying time, and that's why we will be offering you solutions, support, and tips on how you can overcome the crisis. There will be money-saving tips, prizes, and special offers. Watch out for the hashtag #YourMoneyMatters on social media."
And here's a request for help. "Can you help carer Emily fulfill her dream? A young carer has won a place at the Leicestershire Dance School and wants to take her next step towards becoming a professional ballerina. Her family, including Sister Tilly Jones, who is a University of Winchester student, has set up a fundraiser as they need to raise £20,000 to cover tuition fees, accommodation, uniform, travel, competition, entry fees, food, and other extras. A GoFundMe appeal has been launched in a bid to get her to King's International Ballet Academy in September. Since she was very young, Amelie has helped care for her dad. Tom Jones had FND, which is functional neurological disorder, which meant he had seizures, stroke-like episodes, paralysis, loss of speech, and permanent chronic fatigue, and often spent time in hospital. Amelie's mum, Sarah, had to reduce her working hours significantly to look after him. 3 years ago, an undiagnosed heart condition called Wolf Parkinson's White was found to be the cause. Tom had an operation which helped improve his physical health, but years of illness have had a lasting impact. Amelie's dream is to make dancing her career. Later this month, Amelie will compete in the All England semi-finals in Portsmouth.
Family Day at Winchester Bike Shop. This is the place where the fence is being built. A bike shop in Winchester is holding a family day to celebrate its launch and opening. Bespoke Biking Cafe and Workshop in King's Walk is hosting the event on May the 21st and will have free kids' bike checks, discounts on breakfast BAPs, and a free route map of a cycle route around the city. People have the chance to either explore the route themselves or join the guided ride leaving the cafe around 11 a.m. with options of playing poo sticks on the river and climbing St. Catherine's Hill along the way. Bespoke Biking is a social enterprise that has grown from a market stall, then joint premises with Open House Deli, and now has its own cafe and workshop in King's Walk. Hella Evans, founder and director, said, "I am so proud of everyone who has been involved in our journey, and to see how the enterprise has grown is amazing. Bex and I enjoyed in Forces 3 years ago, and both Open House Deli and Bespoke Biking have flourished and now have their own premises next door to each other. We fix bikes, we hire bikes, and we train people to fix their bike. We have also been able to offer refurbished bikes for asylum seekers and young carers. We have a team of volunteers who are biking heroes, helping get donated bikes refurbished for sale or for those in need." And there's a lovely picture of all of them outside the cafe with its pink signpost above it.
More than 100 die in poverty, that's in brackets, what do I mean? Commas. Each year. Sorry. More than 100 people die in poverty in Winchester every year, according to estimates published for the first time. End-of-life charity Marie Curie said it was shocking that more than 90,000 people across the UK pass away while living in poverty annually, and called for urgent action from the government. And the findings could be an underestimate, as research by Loughborough University on behalf of the charity analysed data from before both the coronavirus pandemic and the cost of living crisis. The estimates suggest that 127 people in Winchester died in 2019, having experienced poverty in the last year of their life, around 11% of the total number of deaths in the area. There were among 10,107 annual deaths in poverty across the South East, and almost 93,000 throughout the whole of the UK. More than 15% of the nearly 605,000 people who died in the UK in 2019 are estimated to have experienced poverty in the last year before their death. Researchers modelled estimates using a combination of data from a survey which closely followed the lives of thousands of people from 2009 to 2019 and local figures on deprivation.
Summer school. Blue Apples Summer School will offer performance skills in acting, dance and singing for young people and adults with learning disabilities. Having worked hard to help isolated people with learning disabilities bounce back from the COVID pandemic and bring new life into the arts, Blue Apple Theatre in Winchester has now extended opportunities in the performing arts to people with learning disabilities into Andover, Southampton, Burslem, and online. During the COVID pandemic, Blue Apple Summer School also helped tackle extended periods of isolation during the long summer break, introducing and enriching skills for both new and experienced performers to young people and adults with learning disabilities. One parent said, "From day one, Anne has loved every minute. She was able to recall every moment and give me a full detailed description of her day. It was so lovely to see her light up like she did. Many of the things ordinary people take for granted are not available to people with learning disabilities. The opportunities for stimulation and social contact are limited, and the summer can seem like a long stretch of isolation. During this Mental Health Awareness Week, which was from May the 9th to the 15th, the Mental Health Foundation has drawn attention to the damaging effect of loneliness and the practical steps to tackling it. Perhaps less widely known is the disproportionately greater impact of loneliness on poor well-being and mental health in people with a learning disability. An article published in Learning Disability Today reports that people with a learning disability are 7 times more likely than their non-disabled peers to be lonely. The key drivers of this loneliness include a lack of support to access community activities and a fear of public attitude, with 39% saying they were worried people would be unkind. MenCap has also identified more contributory factors, including inaccessible venues and facilities, lack of inclusive activities, lack of support, financial constraints, lack of accessible information, mobility and transport difficulties, and negative attitudes towards disability. Learning disability organisations are all calling for practical steps to tackle these barriers, suggesting communities develop resources needed to tackle loneliness.
Rather a sad theme going on here. Death of a man who was sleeping rough. A troubled man who died while sleeping rough outside a city centre shop had accidentally consumed a lethal mix of prescription drugs and alcohol, an inquest has ruled. Timothy Holden, 53, of no fixed abode, was found to have had more than 2.5 times the legal drink limit of alcohol and 4 different medications in his system when examined at post-mortem. On the morning of April the 2nd, 2021, police were called to the corner of Middlebrook Street and Silver Hill after he was discovered in a lifeless state by an employee of Bespoke Biking. A statement from the employee, read out by the coroner, said that he had spotted Mr. Holden covered by blankets and a sleeping bag with another person lying next to him while on his way to work. He said he had assumed the pair were sleeping. Later that morning, he had noticed the other rough sleeper had gone, but Mr. Holden remained in the same position. After approaching Mr. Holden, the employee found him to be unresponsive and cold to the touch. Police confirmed his death on arrival and searched his body, discovering 2 half-drunk bottles of Lambrini and Lucozade, alongside blister packs of various medications. The inquest was told how Mr. Holden slipped into depression in 2017 after his partner, who was pregnant with their unborn child at the time, died shortly after his release from prison. He had struggled with heroin and crack cocaine addiction in the immediate fallout, and at the height of his alcoholism was drinking at least 3 litres of wine a day. A report from St Clement's GP surgery revealed he had made multiple attempts to take his own life and had been rushed to A&E 7 times due to drug and alcohol misuse. He was offered numerous places to live by social services and did spend time in accommodation, but opted to return to the streets due to feelings of claustrophobia. The inquest heard he also had a record of missing appointments with support organisations. Despite largely refusing to engage with the local authorities, Mr. Holden was on a course of regular prescribed medication for his physical, mental and addiction issues, including methadone, which he was taking to wean off heroin. However, the court heard that the evidence established between April the 1st and 2nd he had taken his prescribed medication alongside additional over-the-counter antihistamines, all of which were depressants known to slow down lung and heart function. The coroner, Chris Wilkinson, ruled that death was accidental.
Jim was born out of lockdown. A personal trainer who has spent 2 years working with clients in leisure centre fields and through computer screens has opened his own gym. Owen Holloway from Kingsworthy has launched Holloway Health and Fitness in Winchester after spending the entire COVID crisis promoting the importance of exercise in a supportive environment for physical and mental health. He said, "I can't believe how far this has all come. What started as a simple idea to help people stay fit and healthy during lockdown has grown beyond anything I imagined. We went from workouts on Zoom to in the rain and shine outdoors and now into a Winchester city centre location for an indoor club. Even I couldn't have predicted how important these workouts would become to the members. Health, physical and mental, should be looked at as a whole, and it is the community that has been created here that has kept others each other going. The opening of the indoor club acts as an extension to the success Owen has already achieved outdoors. What started as a project to support the health of local people during lockdown quickly grew to 40 founding members and now has its sights set on helping many more. The club is so much more than a place to work out. Its community is at its core, adds Raj Das, a club member and sales director from Winchester. We've all faced difficult times in the last few years, but Hollywood Health and Fitness has become a place where we not only stay fit and healthy, but our mental health is boosted by being surrounded by an incredibly supportive bunch of people, with Owen at the centre of it. Holloway Health and Fitness runs a busy and varied class schedule through the week, combining outdoor group classes and a weekly run club. The club at Winchester Lido, or is it Lido, I never remember, in Church Lane, also houses a coffee lounge stocked with Winchester coffee roasters beans, a sports massage room run by assistant coach and massage therapist Nikki Jobson, a separate yoga studio used by instructor Ellen Berhold, as well as shower and toilet facilities. A gym environment can be intimidating for some, but I cannot stress enough how welcoming this club is. It's about community, not competitiveness. Nikki Jobson adds, "We all celebrate each other's individual success."
And continuing along our healthy activities here, there's an article which is titled "Cyclist Raise Vital Funds for Charity," and it's accompanied by a picture of the 6th Wessex Heartbeat Cycle Sportive, yeah, which, as a slight aside, I wonder what's happened to the 1st to the 5th of the Wessex Heartbeat Cycle Sportive. That's by the by. Cyclists across Hampshire have pedalled their way to raise vital funds for Wessex Heartbeat. The 6th Wessex Heartbeat Cycle Sportive, which was sponsored by automotive group Hendy for the 5th year running, saw 68 riders take to the roads to raise vital funds for the region's leading heart charity. A true community effort, a team of hard-working local volunteers, including members of Southampton Magna, New Forest and Bishop's Waltham's Rotary Clubs, signed up to marshal the special fundraising route. Local businesses also lent a hand, with Giant Store Southampton offering mechanical support and Hampshire Drinks Company Hilden providing water supplies. Commencing and finishing in the grounds of Embley Park in Romsey, participants chose to take on a 40-mile route or a more challenging 70-mile course. Heading off in the glorious spring sunshine, cyclists travelled through Romsey, over to Winchester, Stockbridge and Broughton, where the 70 and 40-mile route split. The longer route took riders over to Salisbury, and the shorter route brought cyclists back to Romsey via East Tytherleigh. Paul Murrells, Hendy New Car Sales Director, took part in this year's Cycle Supportive and was very impressed with the annual event's organisation. He said, "Every element of this special fundraising event was brilliant, from the route and the directions to all the marshals, who not only made sure we were going the right way, but also gave us some vital encouragement. It was a great thing to be part of, and it's been wonderful to be able to raise funds for such a worthwhile charity." John Munro, CEO of Wessex Heartbeat, said, "Every year the Cycle Sportive gets bigger and better, and we would like to express our gratitude to all of those involved. Be it on the road or on a stationary bike, cycling is a fantastic way to keep your heart health in check, which makes the Cycle Sportive such a fitting way to raise money for Wessex Heartbeat."
Black children stopped by police. Black and ethnic minority children in Hampshire are up to 5 times more likely to be stopped and searched compared to white children, new research suggests. Early data being compiled by Hampshire County Council and the Youth Offending Team shows that black children across the county are more likely to be stopped and searched by police officers. The news comes after Home Secretary Priti Patel outlined plans to lift all restrictions on police and search, on police stop and search powers. Councillors on the County Council's Children and Young People Select Committee have voiced their concerns about the disparity. Independent member for Cowplain and Hartplain, Councillor Prad Baines, said, "The report stated that black children are five times more likely to be arrested, and I was wondering if that is the same picture here in Hampshire. Questions needed to be asked about that racial disparity and what is causing it. My concern is that the schools haven't been properly dealing with discriminatory incidents, as the council has previously discussed, and the lack of support being offered could make these children more vulnerable. Government figures for England and Wales suggested that the proportion of youth cautions issued have decreased for white children and increased for black and ethnic minority children. Meanwhile, white people are responsible for six times as many criminal offences, while black people are more likely to be victims of homicide." Nikki Shave, the head of Hampshire's youth offending team, admitted that there is plenty of work to do. She said, "This is the number one priority for us at the moment. We have some growing local data, and there is evidence to suggest children from black and mixed heritage are more likely in Hampshire to be stopped and searched. We have been absolutely certain that what we're doing is correct. Sorry, we have to be absolutely certain that what we're doing is correct."
A society runs a workshop for young carers. A Winchester Musical Society recently ran a workshop with their Charity of the Year, Winchester Young Carers, before their production of Me and My Girl. Winchester Musical and Opera Society worked with children from the charity, which works to support young carers aged 8 to 17. The children were taught the well-known numbers The Lambeth Walk and The Sun Has Got His Hat On by Katie Hickson and Suzanne Hall, and with the cast of Me and My Girl, including lead actors Matt McGrath, Molly Moffat-McGrath and Daniel Williams. Katie Hickson, vice chair of the society, said, "The workshop was incredibly worthwhile for everyone involved. The children and volunteers were absolutely brilliant and threw themselves into the morning. I would hope we could run something similar in the future for Winchester Young Carers." And there's a picture of both the cast and the carers looking as though they've enjoyed themselves, with a couple of other bits taken, I think, from Me and My Girl.
And this is advance notice of a business show that's returning. A business expo is back for its third year and will bring together hundreds of businesses from across the South Coast. The Hampshire Business Show will make its return on Thursday, October the 20th, at the Aegeus Bowl in Southampton. More than 1,000 attendees are set to come along to the event, which is sponsored by Southampton law firm Paris Smith LLP, Portsmouth Marketing Agency, Vertical Leap, and Oxford-based startup support business Oxford Innovation, and more. There will be 15 industry-leading speakers from across Hampshire from a range of industries, including marketing agency owner Jade Scottney and entrepreneur Chris Schutrips, I hope I've got that right, who runs Henderson Pub Company, which includes the Hunters Inn in Romsey and the Dolphin Inn in Hursley. The speakers will share advice and insight in their fields of expertise, allowing attendees to learn more and learn new things and grow their businesses. More than 100 businesses will exhibit at the event, giving business owners and professionals of all backgrounds the opportunity to connect, collaborate, and win new business. The show will be split across two floors, spanning three zones across the two floors, two seminar zones, and the keynote stage. There will also be a headline keynote speaker, which will be revealed later in the year. Last year saw the UK's number one motivational speaker, Brad Burton, and entrepreneur and TV personality Baroness Karen Brady give talks on the keynote stage. The show's founder, Josh Mitchell, said, "Last year was the first year post-COVID that the event went ahead, and it was one of the first in the big business events in the diary after lockdown. We were incredibly pleased with the event and had feedback that the attendees gained a huge amount of value in the way of connecting with others and winning business. This year, we'd like to see even more businesses being passed off the back of the event. Hopefully, as a region, we can grow the business community even more and continue to boost the economy with the work that we do. And free tickets for the show can be booked at hampshirebusinessshow.com.
Twirly Woos to come to city with show. Great Big Hoo, Toodaloo, Chickadee and Chick will be on stage delighting families in Winchester later this month. Twirly Woos Live will be at the Theatre Royal Winchester on Sunday, May the 29th and Monday, May the 30th. The CBeebies show will follow the colourful characters as they discover the world around them as they set sail in their big red boat. A spokeswoman said, Twirly Woos Live is brought to the stage by the people behind the Very Hungry Caterpillar show and Sarah and Duck Live on stage with the lovable Twirly Woos brought to life thanks to beautifully inventive puppetry and a show written by Zoe Bourne, who has also recreated for the stage beloved children's titles like Thomas and Friends and Farm and Sam. It is an hour of colourful fun and laughter with mischief, music and surprises. A great introduction to the theatre for all ages. Twirly Woos Live will be at Theatre Royal on May the 29th at 1:30 p.m. and 4 p.m. and May the 30th at 10:30 a.m. and 1:30 p.m. Go to the theatreroyalwinchester.co.uk, and there's a lovely picture of the two girls who are doing the puppetry, both with red hair, which is interesting, and all the Twirly Woo chickadees and toodaloos and all that twirling around.
Mayor of Winchester presides at new study centre. A school in Winchester welcomed the Mayor of Winchester to preside at the first official event in its new study centre. Councillor Vivian Achval visited St Swithin's School to see its new Jill Isaac Study Centre and present students with certificates at the Jill Isaac Festival of Scholarship. 9 students of the school were recognised for their extraordinary work in the fields of science, English literature, history, geography and biology. Amongst the awardees were the winner of the Hampshire Young Poets competition and a young published author. The girls all presented on their particular project before the mayor honoured them with their awards. The new study centre is a tribute to Jill Isaac, a former student who died in 2017 and was donated in her honour by her husband Malcolm. It will be used by members of the school's upper sixth, who are studying as they prepare for their A-levels and apply to competitive universities. Headmistress Jane Gandee said, "It will truly be a privilege to study there. Malcolm's vision, shared wholeheartedly by the school, is of a soaring space to encourage thinking and dreams of academic success." And there's a photograph of the mayor in full fig, hat and red cloak thing, and her big badge of office, sitting on a bench with the headmistress and the students who've been awarded things standing behind her. And behind that is this, the outside of this study centre, which is curved and made of wood and glass and looks very light and very modern.
Refugees face a visa blunder. 2 Ukrainian refugees bound for a Hampshire village have been stuck in Poland for 7 weeks due to a Home Office blunder. Aleksandra Balakina, 23, and her stepbrother Ihor Serpilin, I hope, 16, left their home in war-torn Ukraine at the end of March, having found a sponsor in Sparsholt under the Homes for Ukraine scheme. They initially expected to be in Poland for a week while they waited for the green light to travel to the UK, but have since been met with a wall of silence from government officials. After sending countless emails and making weekly visits to the visa centre in Wrocław, Poland, the siblings learned that Ihor had mistakenly been marked as an unaccompanied minor and therefore unable to travel, despite Oleksandra being registered as legal guardian in the application. Steve Bryan, MP, has said he's been working tirelessly to rectify the issue, but it remains unclear how long it will take before the relevant ministers finalise their decision. Meanwhile, the siblings are set to move for the fourth time on Saturday, having been unable to tie down long-term accommodation due to the uncertainty. They have been supported by Charlie, a Russian-speaking fixture from Week, who is currently carrying out aid work in the country. He lived in Ukraine for several years and has helped the pair with their application. He also spearheaded a fundraising campaign to house the pair while they're stuck in limbo. Speaking to the Chronicle, Oleksandra said, "We are so tired. We have moved three times already, and we've been visiting the visa centre every week. Every day we're waiting for an email, but it never arrives. We're told there is a problem, but we don't get any feedback. Maybe if we did, there might be something we could do to help. I just don't understand. I'm angry about it, to be honest. We have a lot of bags with us because we thought we might only be in Poland for 1 week. It's an uncomfortable way to live. I'm so grateful for the help and financial support we have received because I can't work in Poland. I don't have a job, and my brother doesn't have the opportunity to study. He didn't finish school. We're learning English while we wait, but we want to do that in England. We want to study and work so we can be useful to society." Their father, Ilya, who works at a hospital in Ukraine, was allowed to leave the country on medical grounds as he suffered a heart attack last year. However, he instead decided to stay as he refused to leave his patients behind. Mr. Bryan said, "My team and I are working flat out, helping constituents who wish to host under the Homes for Ukraine scheme. It's the bedrock of every MP's work, I guess, but I've never wished I could wave a magic wand to help more than I do right now. We've helped so many, and I'm quietly going about meeting many of our guests just to welcome them to our country and see what I can feed back to ministers about the process."
Care residents to move to new building. Residents and staff at St Cross Grange, a Greensleeves care home in Winchester, will be transferring to a brand new building in Giles Hill. St Giles View, which will open in the autumn, will be operated by Brendan Care. St Cross Grange was built more than 150 years ago, with a history of providing social support and care to older people in Winchester since the 1930s, as well as housing soldiers during World War II. The future of St Cross Grange is unclear, with a spokesman saying they are working with advisers to explore options for the home, so no set plans as of yet. While the stunning building benefits from this rich history, many care home residents are increasingly in need of more accessible and modern facilities, and so the decision has been to make the move to a new purpose-built setting. The residents and staff who currently live and work in St Giles Cross Grange will be given the opportunity to transfer to St Giles View, where they will benefit from 60 purpose-built ensuite bedrooms, as well as a cafe, restaurant, hair and beauty salon, and communal spaces. Marianne Wanstall, Chief Executive of Brendan Care, said, "We are delighted to be welcoming residents and colleagues from St Cross Grange to the Brendan Care family. Like Greensleeves Care, Brendan Care puts residents at the heart of everything we do, and we are looking forward to working together to ensure a seamless transition when our new home opens this autumn."
Children's workshops in court. The National Justice Museum's unique courtroom workshops are coming to Winchester, but for a limited time only. Museum bosses are branching out from their London base at the Royal Courts of Justice, bringing their hugely successful courtroom workshops to Winchester Crown Court for 1 week only this July. the Inspirational Learning Sessions offer children and young people a unique opportunity to gain hands-on understanding of the law and justice. These two-hour courtroom workshops bring the law to life through authentic and learning experiences. Students learn about the justice system, law, and society, and explore real cases in a real courtroom. They will prepare and present a trial, taking on all the courtroom roles, including judge, jury, barristers, witnesses, and defendant. The jury members will reach their verdict, and the judge will decide upon the most appropriate sentence from a range of sentencing options. Jill Braley, Director of Learning for the National Justice Museum, said, "We know from feedback how much schools value being able to visit a real courtroom to prepare and deliver a real trial. It's such a unique way to discover how our courtrooms work, what all the people in a courtroom do, and have the opportunity to decide the outcome of the case they have chosen to explore. There's even the opportunity to question judges and barristers during the visit for anyone that might have ambitions to take up a legal career. This week will be a very special one for local schools. Workshops range from contemporary themes like cyberbullying to historical topics including the suffragette movement and are available for students key stage 2 to 5. Special rates are available to schools with high percentages of free school meals. These workshops are only available from Monday the 4th to Friday the 8th of July."
And a green light has been given for an alcohol licence. An application to serve alcohol from Winchester's former pumping station has been approved by licensing chiefs, despite a host of objections from nearby residents. General Store co-founders Alex Donnan and Laura Turner applied for a premises license to serve alcohol for consumption both on and off the grounds of the pump house on Garnier Road, St. Cross, from 12 noon to 6 p.m. on Mondays and Tuesdays, 12 noon to 8 p.m. on Wednesdays and Thursdays, 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. on Thursdays and Saturdays, and 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Sundays. The application was discussed at a licensing subcommittee meeting on Wednesday, May the 11th. Some 27 residents submitted objections to the proposals during the consultation phase, six of whom made representation to the subcommittee in person. Among those was Councillor Chris Edwards, who represents the St. Michael Ward for Winchester City Council. He highlighted public concerns about the position of the pump house, citing the road layout, lack of traffic controls, and increasing congestion as a possible risk to customers leaving the venue. He further referenced the site's position within South Downs National Park, and its immediate proximity to a site of importance for nature conservation and a site of special scientific interest as a potential, quote, intrusive public nuisance. But interim licensing manager Bryony Appletree insisted road safety concerns in respect of a licensing application could be considered by Hampshire Police if deemed appropriate. However, no such representation had been made. Licensing chiefs further acknowledged the applicants had agreed a reduction in the proposed licensing hours with officers during the consultation phase and suggested a sign be installed encouraging customers to leave the premises quietly. The approval signals another step towards fulfilling the owner's vision for the repurposed site, which was described as an independent, upmarket, co-working, well-being cafe that would be appealing to the locals of Winchester in the application. A previous application was lodged by the pair last year, and that sparked similar backlash and was subsequently withdrawn, with Mr. Donnan later explaining that he had, quote, really listened to the concerns of the community, unquote. He had formally insisted any further application for an alcohol licence would only be for members of the workspace to enable them to hold parties.
Children's book is published by Pupil. A teenager from Winchester School has become a published author with her book The Sea Stole My Glasses. Ankara Prabdil, a pupil year 8 at St Swithin's School, has published a picture book. Ankara was inspired by her concern for the environment and by a particular incident that happened on her holiday when she lost her glasses whilst playing in the sea. She wrote the book for her youngest brother, who suggested that the crabs might have come and picked up her glasses. With help from Mexican-based coach Jaime Zarate, Ankara illustrated her book before sending it to Amazon for publishing. The St Swithin's School community has been celebrating Ankara's success by awarding her a St Swithin's Chair of Council commendation for her book. She has also been showcased as a role model for younger children in the prep school, where only a few years ago she was a student herself. She read her book to them during an assembly, answered questions from a panel of children, and signed copies of the book for each class. Ankara said, "I'm incredibly excited about having my book released. Receiving a commendation made me feel very proud. I hope to publish another book soon as part of a series with an environmental theme." Headmistress of St Swithin's, Jane Grandy, said, "We congratulate Ankara on bringing her vision to reality. Perhaps the most remarkable aspect of her achievement is that it required significant levels of perseverance, as it took her well over a year to write, illustrate and publish her book. We eagerly anticipate the next instalment." The Sea Stole My Glasses is available to purchase from Amazon for £5.99. And there's a lovely picture of Ankara and getting her commendation for her book from Alison McClure, looking very happy with the commendation, and a lovely picture, obviously, of the book, which is very attractive.
And here's a plea for more trees. Did you know that there are more trees in the UK now than in 1086? When naturalists talk about the landscape, they often lament the loss of our native tree cover. But the demise of the great forests and wood pastures that once covered this land disappeared over 5,000 years ago. Clearance of our woodlands accelerated through to the First World War, when less than 5% of the country remained with tree cover. Hampshire remains one of the most heavily wooded counties in the country, and yet we are going to have to do a lot more planting if we are to avoid the main threats from climate change and the ongoing loss of wildlife. In the past 15 years, many companies have become increasingly concerned about their carbon footprint, and to offset their emissions, have taken to planting trees. The result has been, in many cases, the wrong trees in the wrong places. A mixture of non-native trees, species that are not suited to local climates or are not looked after adequately, has resulted in many failed projects. House building firms too have responded to targets of planting trees with little thought about location, species or access from the public. It is not a wonder then that many of the new planning plantations have died, and the percentage of tree cover in the UK as a result has changed little in the past 15 years. Moreover, we have very little access to our woodland areas. At least 70% is in private ownership, with no or very restricted access. Much of the rest may be accessible, but is often poorly managed and looked after. The other illusion is that planting dense stands of trees is a good thing. Centuries ago, the wooded landscape would have been a mosaic of wood pastures and wetlands, with scrubby acres of heath and moorland. Forested areas would have had open glades and meadows. Areas of fallen trees would often be allowed to rot where they lay, providing a myriad of habitats for thousands of insects, birds and mammals. In Hampshire, we have the New Forest, which, better than any other semi-natural area of the UK, represents how much of the UK once looked. But even here, nature struggles with overgrazing in some areas, poor management in others, and recreational pressure causing disturbance to nesting animals and birds. As we look to a future dominated by climate change, we will need to create increasingly resilient landscapes that are full not only of well-known native species, but where we begin to experiment with new species from the Mediterranean and North America that are drought and storm resistant. We will also need to create nature-rich corridors from our national parks into the surrounding countryside to enable species to move more freely across a fast-changing landscape. Our hope also is that we reinstate a right to roam, where once again many woodlands are opened to be enjoyed by the public, which in turn will reduce the pressures on some of our best-loved forests.
And this is a story about some pupils that have created a sculpture from recycled materials. Pupils at a Winchester school have unveiled their new sculpture situated in the school grounds. The environmental group at Henry Beaufort School, run by Miss McNamara, created a sculpture from recycled materials. The students have been attending the Environment Club and have spent their time creating eco-bricks from recycled donated plastic. And these have been put together with reclaimed railway sleepers, kindly donated by Romsey Reclamation. Miss McNamara said, "We think it's wonderful. This is a project that was started to highlight our over-reliance on plastic consumption and to reduce the amount of plastic going into landfill. All of the eco-bricks used were donated from the community, and we have successfully turned trash into treasure. Hopefully, this sculpture can act as a catalyst for other ideas on upcycling and repurposing plastics." And it's accompanied by a picture in the school grounds of the teacher, Miss McNamara, surrounded by some of her pupils, and the sculpture. And the sculpture is, if I can describe it this way, two reclaimed railway sleepers on end, and then the gap between the two sleepers is filled in by these so-called eco-bricks, which I think look a little bit like, they're all rectangular, and they look a little bit like the bottom of plastic bottles. But in fact, it actually makes a very attractive sculpture, and it's all made from reclaimed materials.
Sleeping out to highlight the plight of cities homeless. More than 150 people gave up their creature comforts and slept out in order to raise money for the city's homeless residents. They took part in the Big Sleep Out, to raise a whopping £25,000 in aid of the Trinity Centre. The event was held on the grounds of Winchester Cathedral on Friday, May the 13th. People gathered at the cathedral from early evening to construct their cardboard castles, their makeshift homes for the night. A host of entertainment was put on for the hardy volunteers, including a performance by Winchester A. Capella. As part of the evening, judges assessed the cardboard castles to find the one that was the best made, and Shenton's solicitors and mediators were crowned the winners. Two lucky raffle winners were also taken on a tower tour of the cathedral, enjoying spectacular views across the city. Winchester Beacon helped young sleepers out to decorate cardboard lanterns with glitter to light a way out of homelessness. And there's a picture of them all, which I was trying to think might have been taken by a drone, but having read that they went up on the tower, it's taken from the top of the cathedral, basically, down over the grounds, where you can see all the cardboard castles. And they're worthy efforts.
Music festival was wonderful. It's now 2 weeks on, somebody says, from our lovely 2002 Chamber Music Festival. 4 days of wonderful music. In spite of losing the artistic director and main cellist, Kate Gould, to COVID at the last minute, and needing substitute players for pianist Dan Tong too, there were remarkably few programme changes. We began with Britten and ended with Elgar, with several pieces by other English composers along the way, living and women composers very well represented, and it was exciting to welcome several contemporary composers in person. The first concert introduced us to the stunning playing of star oboist Olivia Stankiewicz, principal of the London Symphony Orchestra, and set the bar high. An incredible start to the festival, reaching perfection, commented another audience member. The Thursday evening concert concluded with Fanny Mendelssohn's String Quartet in E-flat. In this, the renowned Castalian Quartet demonstrated their extraordinary focus and strong communication skills. Friday was busy and one of the most exciting days I can remember in 15 years of this marvellous festival. We could enjoy an open rehearsal, a fascinating talk, and an afternoon concert with Schumann's beautiful romances for oboe and piano. Later, with restorative glass in hand, there was an innovative, more relaxed Scandinavian evening, introducing us to the beguiling tone of Sibby Simon's Hardanger Fiddle, before an exhilarating performance of the Sibelius Quartet. Saturday evening's wonderful gala concert in the Theatre Royal was the result of a highly successful collaboration between festival musicians and string players from Winchester Camerata, directed by violinist David Adams, leader of Welsh National Opera Orchestra. The performance of Elgar's Introduction and Allegro was totally memorable, sumptuous in the rich string tone. Another innovation was the family concert on Sunday morning in the Nutshell, which had 5-star reviews from 3 to 80-year-olds. There was more fabulous Elgar to end the final concert, a consummate performance of his piano quintet. Behind the scenes, there were concerts in schools, a masterclass, a funky lunch for Winchester Gold, and further community outreach events. This was a thrilling festival for audience, musicians, and many more, a well-crafted yet extraordinarily varied programme performed to the highest standard with a friendly group of musicians whose enthusiasm for playing and deep love of the music delighted us all.
COVID will be monitored by the council. The county council insists it will continue to monitor the COVID-19 situation in Hampshire, despite challenges in accurately recording cases. Every month, Hampshire County Council's local outbreak engagement board is supposed to meet, so that health experts can update cabinet members on the state of play in the county. So far, 4 of the 5 scheduled meetings this year have been cancelled, and it has been struck off the County Council's calendar for the remainder of the year. A spokesman for Hampshire County Council confirmed that these meetings will no longer be taking place as the Council's COVID strategy continues to evolve. A spokesman said, "We do continue to closely monitor COVID data as part of our ongoing response to the virus, in line with the government's living with the COVID-19 strategy. During the pandemic, the local outbreak engagement board provided strategic oversight of Hampshire's health protection response to COVID-19, including latest surveillance data. However, since national restrictions were lifted, available COVID data has changed, and the virus is now managed like other respiratory diseases, with information now monitored as part of our day-to-day public health protection activity in Hampshire."
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week, so thank you to our editors, copying and memory stick preparation teams, and thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Vara Williams.
Goodbye.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vinson, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. And when you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.